Why do we sometimes explode over the smallest things? A forgotten coffee order triggers fury. A casual comment from a friend sends us spiraling into days of anxiety. We tell ourselves we're overreacting, yet we can't seem to stop. Here's what's really happening. Our emotions aren't responding to what's in front of us. They're responding to what's still unresolved within us. Consider this moment. You're making dinner when your daughter mentions moving across the country. Suddenly, your chest constricts, breathing becomes difficult, panic floods your body. The reaction seems wildly out of proportion. She's an adult making a reasonable choice. But beneath that surface trigger lies something deeper. Perhaps years earlier, your husband was hospitalized with dangerously high blood pressure. Every mention of separation unconsciously reactivates that terror of abandonment. Our disproportionate reactions aren't signs we're broken. They're breadcrumbs leading us back to unhealed wounds. The feelings we've been taught to suppress don't disappear. They wait in the shadows, ambushing us when we least expect it. We've mastered emotional evasion. Hurt at work? Smile through it while replaying the incident all night. Angry at your partner? Pretend everything's fine until you explode over dishes. We've built sophisticated systems for avoiding our inner lives, believing this makes us strong. After the pandemic, many fell into an emotional pit they couldn't name. I can't do this anymore. Something is really wrong. The problem isn't bad emotions. It's feeling nothing at all. No anger, no sadness, no joy. Complete numbness. During collective trauma, this shutdown protected us from overwhelming pain, but kept us closed off even after the danger passed. We've either resigned ourselves to numbness, cheerfully insisting, "I'm fine," or handed complete control to wild emotions that hijack our days. Neither extreme leads to the connection and authenticity we crave. Long before you could form words, you were learning what to do with your feelings. When you cried as an infant, did someone rush to comfort you or leave you to self-soothe? When you expressed anger as a toddler, were you held with compassion or told, "Big kids don't act like that"? These early experiences shaped your emotional blueprint in ways you've never consciously examined. We enter this world as feeling beings, not thinking ones. A newborn can't think, but they can feel. They want their mother. They sense discomfort. They experience hunger. Emotions flood through us from our first breath, designed to connect us to ourselves and others. Yet most of us absorbed messages that feelings were problems to solve rather than information to receive. Many grew up in families where emotions weren't discussed. Football families suppressed feelings for competitive effectiveness. Military households prized stoicism. Religious communities taught that emotions were dangerous. Meanwhile, the broader culture swung to the opposite extreme. If you don't feel in love, leave. If it feels right, do it. Caught between these conflicting messages, we've lost the ability to simply be with what we feel. Picture your emotional life as a river you're navigating in a canoe. On one bank sits explosive emotional expression, rage, uncontrolled weeping, throwing objects. On the other bank lies complete emotional shutdown, feeling nothing, dismissing everything. The goal is staying in the middle of the river, but trauma narrows that waterway, making it nearly impossible to avoid crashing into the banks. Emotions aren't meant to control us. They're meant to inform us. They alert us, connect us, help us make sense of our world. Joy incites gratitude. Anger fights injustice. Regret reminds us we need forgiveness. Sadness draws us to seek comfort. Fear provides protective discernment. Without emotions, we'd lose worship, love, art, and the ability to comfort the grieving. The problem isn't the feeling itself, but what we do with it. When we judge ourselves for feeling angry, sad, or afraid, we're judging ourselves for being human. Instead of asking, "Why do I feel this way?" ask, "What is this feeling trying to tell me?" When overwhelming feelings arise, we face a choice: engage directly or resist through evasion. Most of us choose evasion through what can be called the three C's: control, cope, and conceal. We grasp at control because it offers the illusion that everything will turn out fine. If we can just organize enough, plan enough, work hard enough, we can outsmart adversity. Sometimes this works. Making your bed can lift your mood. But constantly controlling emotions disconnects us from ourselves and others, shutting down not just difficult feelings, but also our capacity for friendship, creativity, and spontaneous joy. When control fails, we cope. About 77% of us turn to unhealthy mechanisms: procrastination, overeating, alcohol, oversleeping, self-harm, isolation, workaholism, shopping, social media scrolling. Even seemingly innocuous habits like Netflix binges provide only momentary relief while underlying issues remain untouched. Finally, we conceal. We hide our emotions out of fear, avoiding difficult realities. Skilled concealers love the word fine. It's short, grammatically correct, and discourages follow-up questions. But concealing requires enormous energy, and eventually, those stuffed feelings find their way out sideways, usually onto the people we love most. A practical pathway through emotional tangles exists: notice, name, feel, and share. Harvard studies reveal that bottling up emotions increases premature death risk by over 30% and cancer risk by 70%. First, notice what's happening inside you. When emotional reserves deplete, even minor events trigger anxiety. Pause and recognize feelings before they manifest as relationship-damaging outbursts. Next, name emotions with specificity. Emotional granularity, describing feelings with nuanced words instead of generic terms, directly connects to better mental, physical, and relational health. As Dr. Daniel Siegel says, if you want to tame it, name it. Third, feel emotions without judgment. Give yourself permission to experience the emotion and persist with the feeling instead of fighting it. Emotional acceptance allows emotions to run their natural course and end more quickly. Finally, share emotions with safe people. Sharing pain in safe relationships literally heals our brains. Neural pathways damaged by trauma reconnect when we share sadness, fear, and worry with people who truly see us. After noticing, naming, feeling, and sharing your emotions, you must decide what to do with them. The better path? Feeling emotions fully, sharing them with trusted people, and letting them draw you closer to others. Sometimes you'll need professional counseling or healing from trauma. This isn't weakness, but emotional intelligence. Two fundamental questions serve as compass points. What do I need to know? Identifies triggers and patterns, while what do I need to do? Guides practical action toward healing. The journey isn't linear. It's a spiral where you revisit themes with greater wisdom each time. We carry multiple emotions simultaneously: joy and fear, sadness and hope about the same circumstance. The emotionally mature person welcomes emotions and learns from them. This process is messy, but maturity means living in the tension, laughing and crying in the same hour. That is the full life possible for you.